And then when are we stopping the Monday before Pesach? Are we
well, that's coming? That's an interesting question. Okay, let's go back to Shoftim Parakhav Aleph. We have some loose ends to pull together. Some loose.
What do we got? A lopsided table here, folks.
Why do we have a lopsided
table? Who's
missing?
Sit next to
well, Ruthie
she usually sits over there. Janet, you're
Janet,
a creature.
Ruth.
You're over there.
Janet, thank you, Judy.
See, it doesn't even make us feel right
Janet,
if you're not in the right place.
Right.
We're as bad as in Shul.
See, one day I'm going to walk in and I'm going to sit over there.
Yeah.
And you'll all
see
be
if
good.
We can.
Well, okay. The women have their places as much as the men. Absolutely. Jack and I do. We have our places.
Now we see you.
Right.
All right, Parak Chaf Aleph. Let's go back to the end of our story.
321.
End of our story has, at least in this case, has a somewhat a happy ending. We have this beautiful picture of the rehabilitation of Shevet Binyamin. So heretofore, we have spent a lot of time discussing a very depressing. Very depressing story, a very violent story. Certainly not one of the higher moments of Jewish biblical history. But they are. This story has a somewhat happy ending, as Bnei Yisrael finally recognize that what they did to Binyamin and the near destruction of Binyamin. Perek Chaf Al, the last chapter of Shoftim. Pasuk, let's go to Pasuk Tet Zayin.
322.
Or Pasuk Tet...
16.
Well, let's start from the beginning of the paragraph. Pasuk Yid Gimel. Vayishlechu kol ha'ida vayidabru ha'bnei binyamin asher b'sela bimon. If you remember, after the in the aftermath of the battle, we had two battles. The battle of against Binyamin and the battle against Yavesh Gilad. They're trying to figure out what to do now with the rehabilitation of Shevet Binyamin after their oath, which just decimated the survivors of, or punished the survivors of the war with Binyamin. So they go to this group of 600 survivors in Selamimon, Vayikra'u lahem Shalom. They call them, they make peace with them, they invite them out of their hiding places, return to Binyamin, and they return to their land. And the solution to the oath was to marry them off to the survivors of Yavesh Gilad, because they were not part of the oath in the first place. And so survivors to survivors, we have a national marriage moment, and that way they can continue to exist. However, v'lom matzu lahem ken, they didn't match up accurately, meaning
they didn't
have the right numbers. The 600 Yavesh Gilad, the 600 survivors of Binyamin, and only 400 survivors of the women of Yavesh Gilad. People had compassion, they regretted Binyamin, and then of course this ironic statement about how God had caused a breach in the tribes of Israel, which is has a certain ironic ring to it. God, why did you let this happen? How could you let us destroy ourselves? What are we going to do to the survivors? For the survivors. Vayamru, Yushat Pleita Levinyamin, Velo Yimache Shevet Meisrael. We need to find some kind of Yerusha, some kind of inheritance, some kind of legacy for the survivors of Binyamin, so that a tribe of Israel should not be wiped out, Velo Yimache Shevet Meisrael. And on the one hand, אנחנו לא נוכל לתת להם נשים בבנותינו כי נשבעו בני ישראל למור ארור נותן אישה לבנימין. We are stuck with this oath at that time. We can't provide our daughters to Binyamin. ויאמרו, they came up with the solution. הנה חג השם בשילו מימים ימים, מימים ימימה. There had been, from days of old. Shoftim is a relatively early story in Sefer Shoftim, even though it's at the end of the book. So I'm not sure how old these days of old are, but nonetheless, there is a celebration of sorts in Shiloh. Hashem mitzvona levet el mizvacha hashemesh lemisila holam mibet el shechem minegev lilvona. This chag, this celebration of Shiloh, takes place north of Beit El, east of the road that goes from Beit El to Shechem. Vayitzavu et bnei Binyamin lemor lechu v'aravtem bakramim. Go lay wait in the vineyards. Uritem v'nei im yitzu bnot Shiloh lachul b'mcholot. As the daughters of Shiloh will go out to dance in circles in the vineyard. It's part of this chag that was celebrated in Shiloh. Must have been some agricultural celebration. Yitzatem min akramim. You will jump out of the vineyards. V'chataftem lachem ish ishto mibnot Shiloh. You will grab. Each one of you will grab one of the daughters of Shiloh as a wife. V'halachtem eretz Binyamin. And take them back to the land of Binyamin. V'haya ki yavo avotam o acheihem lariv eleinu. If their brothers or fathers will come to fight with us and say to us, well, hey, what happened? What about this oath? V'amarnu aleim chanunu otam ki lo lakachnu ish ishtom b'milchama ki lo atem netatem lehem ke'et te'eshamu. You are not guilty. You didn't give your daughters. They were taken by them. And in a context in which it was considered legitimate, there must have been some sort of a, as I once told you, the analogy to the Havdil Elif Alfei Havdalot, Sadie Hawking's day. This was their equivalent.
Maybe it was Tubav.
And the Gemara actually says it was Tubav. That's the source for Tubav. One of the suggestions as to what Tubav was about was this story here.
Isn't Lachtov to kidnap?
Lachtov is to grab.
Uh-huh. Isn't that a pretty harsh word, to grab?
Yeah. Well, it was a celebration. That's what they were doing. They were sort of they were all dancing around. It was sort of this big national shidduch day. Yeah. It was a celebration, and they would run up and you grab by the hand and off they go to the rabbi to get married. This was a very early part of. V'yasu kem b'nei Binyamin v'yisu nashim lemisparam min ha'mecholalot asher gazalu. They married women from the dance, from the circles, from those whom they gazalu. Chatef, gazal. This was all. I mean, the use of these words is specifically because of the issue of they can't give their daughters over to Binyamin. So they did it in such a way that it was reversed.
Gazal's also negative.
It's the same word as chatef.
It's not like a happy word.
Right, but it's like in this context, it's used in a kind of almost tongue-in-cheek sense, because that's what the celebration was. It was the girls were all out and dancing. I mean, there's the description of this in the Mishnah in Ta'anit is actually very beautiful. It's very, and I think the atmosphere of this description is a positive one. It's describing this kind of great celebration and the shidduchim, and everybody's marrying, and
rebuilding a tribe of Binyamin.
That's right. Vayachu vayeshuvu el nachalatam vayevnu atarim vayeshu bahem. They went. They returned to their inheritance, to their portions. They built their cities. They dwelt therein. And you're just missing the phrase. And they lived happily ever after. Vayitalchu misham bnei Yisrael ba'et ahi ish l'shivto l'mishpachto v'yetzu misham ish l'nachalato. They went back, bnei Yisrael, and returned to their homes, each one to their shevet, each one to their family, to their portion, to their inheritance. The tribes of Israel are now back intact, whole, back to their lands and to their tribes, and full account of all the tribes of Israel. Everybody is living happily ever after. Ba'yimimahem Ein Melech B'Yisrael Ish Hayashar Be'inav Yaseh. So that phrase we've seen already many times, but really only four times. The tragedy of Binyamin is there, but the end of the story is there to depict not the tragedy of what happened in the past, but how they were able to rehabilitate out of the out of the ashes of the tragedy, out of the remnants that survived, even the phraseology, the pleita, Yerushat pleita leBinyamin, really this part of the story is about how out of the near destruction of Israel, or near destruction of a tribe, they were able to bring about a rehabilitation of Shevet Binyamin through the circles and the dancing, the mechalot of the celebrations of Shiloh, and the reference to the kramim, to the vineyards that took place in this place of Shiloh. It's interesting that Shiloh is in Har Ephraim, north of Binyamin, so they have to go into the north, right? It's the daughters of it's not the daughters of Binyamin, it's the daughters of Har Ephraim that will eventually be the ones to rehabilitate the, or in this case, first Yavesh Gilad, and then Har Ephraim to rehabilitate Binyamin.
When you think of the Nevi'im in totality,
mm-hmm.
is this one of the few, or are there a lot that have all of this gory stuff, and then all of a sudden everything's living happily ever after?
Well, that's very interesting question. Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting question. I mean, in part, that's not an uncommon cycle in Jewish history, or in any history, right? Mm-hmm. The whole idea is that you're that out of the tragedy, the depth to which the tragedy is described is there in a sense in the backdrop to the question of, are they able to survive? Are they able to rehabilitate? Are they able to come back? And a part of the message, I think, that the story leaves us with is that as horrible and as terrible as it got, and it did really get to the point where they almost lost an entire tribe of Israel, through circumstances, through divine providence, through creative thinking, through all kinds of resolutions, they were able to bring it all back. They were able to bring Binyamin back to life. And Binyamin really does come back to life. Binyamin bounces back in a very strong way. Remember, this is early in Shoftim. So between here and the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, assuming that this story, even though it's at the end of the Sefer, is really early, there's several hundred years. In those 700 years, Binyamin rebuilds itself to the point where by the time we enter into the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the first king of Israel is chosen from Shevet Binyamin. Right? Shaul is from Shevet Binyamin. So it really is, as much as it's the story of the horrible tragedies of Pelegish Begiva, which is how this book ends, it's also there's not an insignificant amount of emphasis on this story as the method by which they rehabilitate the Shevet. To the point where, according to tradition, according to the Gemara, at least one tradition in the Gemara, it's the source for a national chag that was celebrated for generations, which was Tu B'Av. Alan, do me a favor. You see the Mishnayos, the Ka'at, the Mishnayos? Pull me out of Masechet Ta'anit.
We never know if the bad guys then.
It's in Moed, either Aleph or Bet, but it's...
Like, well,
you never, say that again?
You never find out, like, if the bad guys in Givah were punished for what they did.
It's in Moed, either Chelek Aleph or Chelek Bet, but it's Ta'anit. Sorry, say that again.
We never found out what happened to the guilty parties in Givah. Were they the ones that were killed or not?
I can only imagine that they were, because the whole city was decimated. I mean, there's the only survivors are 600 people, I would assume, and Givah was the first ones to be attacked, so I would assume that the perpetrators
were... The story never goes back to that.
No. It never goes back to that, and had they actually, the perpetrators, had the evil ones survived, I don't think it would have left that unmentioned. I think that was part of the whole balance of the war, was that the first 2 days, the way we explained it, the first 2 days, they lost because of a punishment for Yavesh Gilad, but the third day, Binyamin lost as a punishment for what they did to Pelegish Begiva. So I can only assume that balance, which was clearly divinely orchestrated, was there to punish the perpetrators of Yavesh Gilad, of the Givah. My apologies for not putting this in the source page, but since we're here already, I'll just read you the beginning of the Mishnah that talks about Tu B'Av, because it's a really the connection is really very powerful. I apologize. I meant to put this on the source page. I don't know why I did not. No. So you'll just listen carefully. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Lo hayu yamim tovim li Yisrael k'chamisha asar ba'av u'chiyam ha-kippurim. Two greatest, most joyous days in the Jewish calendar are Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur referring specifically to Matzei Yom Kippur, but Matzei Yom Kippur because they were Bnei Yisrael were forgiven at that day. Yom Kippur is a whole different genre in this Mishnah, which is a separate discussion. It's why it's in Tanit. It's the last Mishnah in Masechet Tanit. But what happened on these 2 days, particularly Chamisha Asar B'Av, is our interest. Shebahem, and this was a national holiday. This was a national event. Shebahem, Benot Yerushalayim, or Benot Yisrael, according to some texts, Yotzot B'chlei Lavan Sheulim. The daughters of Israel would go out into the streets in a celebration of sorts, in white dresses, in white clothes, that were borrowed so that they wouldn't be distinguished between who is rich and who is poor, who had and who didn't. So everybody had to borrow their clothes. Lo levayesh et misha enlo, not to embarrass somebody didn't have. Ubnot Yerushalayim, or Ubnot Yisrael, yotzot v'cholot bakramim. Listen to the phraseology. V'cholot bakramim. And they would dance in circles in the vineyards. Where does the phrase come from?
Shofting.
We just read it. Mm-hmm. Right? Chag Hashem b'Shiloh. What were they doing? Yasukim binyamin v'yisun nashim l'misparam min ha-mecholot asher gazalu. Right? That's the whole... These daughters would go out and they would dance b'mecholot. V'litem v'neim yotzot b'not shilo l'chul b'mecholot. To dance in circles in the kramim. V'yitzatem min ha-kramim v'chatavtem l'chem ish. Ishto m'b'not shilo. So that's exactly the description here. The Benot Yisrael or Benot Yerushalayim would go out and they would dance in circles, cholot, bakramim, in the vineyards. Uma yu omrot, and what were they saying? What were they proclaiming? What were they dancing about? Bachor, sana einecha ure'ei ma ata borer lach. Young man, lift up your eyes, choose, and choose wisely. It was a national shidduch day. Choose and choose wisely. Al titen enecha banoi. Don't look only at external beauty. Look at things like titen enecha b'mishpacha, value of family and of lineage. Sheker hachen vehevel hayofi shayirat Hashem miti talal. Famous pasuk Mishlei, woman of fears God. And it goes on and on to describe the...
Would they possibly know that?
Know what?
Right.
Again, so, yeah, obviously there's a little bit more to the story. However, but this description of this... And then there are all kinds of other psukim that they would quote from various places in Shir Shirim and Tehillim. There's a list of all the psukim that they would quote. But the notion of this kind of national Shidduch day, specifically to on Tu B'Av and Motzei Yom Kippur. So the Gemara has a whole discussion of why these two dates. Tu B'Av on the one hand, Motzei Yom Kippur on the one hand, because it's the day in which Israel is purified. So but after Yom Kippur, the first thing we do after Israel is purified is we go out and we make Shidduchim. Right, rebuild the Jewish homes. In other words, there's a certain connection between the idea that you've essentially started Bnei Yisrael all over again. So that's the moment to build the next generation, to go out and create Shidduchim. It was great. Solve the Shidduch crisis of the modern world. Maybe it's a system we should go back to. But Tu B'Av is a mystery because the date is mysterious. So in the Gemara, there's a lengthy discussion of all the different options or possibilities to where this Tu B'Av came from, what the date signifies, and why that particular date. And one of them was that was the date that this event of Sheva Binyamin took place. And so as a kind of preservation of the Chag, of the rehabilitation of Sheva Binyamin, on an annual basis, it became a national Shidduch day. And it was a great celebration, and everybody was rejoicing. It's hard for us to put our heads around it because our context of marriage is so different than it was in the days of Tanakh and certainly in the days of Chazal. But nonetheless, if you allow yourself the license to be able to put yourself back into that world where the where this was something which they celebrated and rejoiced over, and it was really quite a remarkable moment. And it all emanates from that moment in our story where they were able to rehabilitate the Shevet that almost was completely destroyed.
But there are segments in Israel who still, you know, women come out in their white dresses. That does take place.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought there was a connection to Tisha B'Av, too, or Tiva.
Not, there is a connection to Tisha B'Av, but not in this context.
No,
meaning that there's a
that the week after Tisha B'Av.
Right. So there is a connection to Tu B'Av in that sense. One of the again, there's about six or seven different opinions in the Gemara as to what date of Tu B'Av connection comes from.
Yeah.
If it's connected to Tisha B'Av, it's exactly 7 days after Tisha B'Av. So if you look at Tisha B'Av as the beginning of sitting Shiva for the Chorban, then Tu B'Av is the day you get up from Shiva. Think about it from that perspective, but and I think there's actually it's a good segue because I think it's actually an interesting observation that Tisha B'Av is about the destruction or the near destruction of Israel. The story of Tu B'Av in the context of Pelegish B'Giv is about the rehabilitation of a Shevet that was almost destroyed, and the process of which we come out of Tisha B'Av and re-emerge, or get up from Shiva, if you will, is to rehabilitate or rebuild Klal Yisrael. So out of the ashes of the Chorban, Yerushat Pleita LeBinyamin, the metaphor becomes to rebuild out of the ashes the people of Israel. So from that perspective, there is a connection between the events of Tu B'Av as they took place here and the events of the aftermath of Tisha B'Av a week later. I actually think that has a deeper significance, because there's a possibility, and I'll share with you this. It's a little complicated, but we don't need to go through all of it, just pieces of it. But there's an interesting connection between this whole story and a nevuah about Ephraim that appears in Sefer Yirmiyahu. And I heard this idea once from Rav Medan. I think it's very creative, but it needs a little bit of background. One of the, if you look at the various moments when we nearly lost a portion of Israel, and out of the ashes, the Yerushat Pleita, it's an interesting phrase, right? We talk about the survivors of the Holocaust as the Sherita, or the survivors of the Churban as the Sherita Pleita. Right, that phrase, the Sherita Plita, actually the first time it's used is here. Right? Yerushat Plita. Or as the legacy of the remnants, the stragglers, those from whom the entire tribe was rehabilitated. So it becomes a very powerful symbol of the ability to rebuild after destruction. It's the first time we find that kind of near destruction of either an entire people or a sector of people, one tribe, and described as such, Hashem Peretz b'shiftei Yisrael, and the ability to out of that destruction rebuild themselves is a very powerful metaphor, very powerful paradigm that we can talk about in the context of Tisha B'Av, we can talk about in the context of the Holocaust, we can talk about it in the context of really any moment in history where we faced a near destruction, and the ability to rebuild ourselves after it became a very significant symbol of Jewish life. Right? It's part of who we are historically, our ability to survive all the challenges of history and rebuild ourselves. But considering the fact that this was the first, now, it became, to a large extent, a very powerful symbol of that message. Now, there's a nevuah that appears in Sefer Yirmiyahu many, many years later that has a completely different context. its most direct context is about the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel. We are familiar with parts of it, and as I read it with you, you'll see exactly how familiar it is to us. But you know, let's just jump into it, and that way you'll see what we're talking about. The reference that I am referring to is Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Aleph. Now, just
I
make life a little simpler for everybody. I took the text of this parak, and I put it onto a page.
Are we starting from the beginning?
We're going to start from the beginning of the parak.
So then it's 5:77.
I took the beginning of this parak, and it may be easier to read out of a Tanakh, it may be easier to read out of this page. I don't know. That's up to you. And I even found that my database had a text mistake or two. So. I'm going to read it out of the Tanakh. You're welcome to look in either way. Yirmiyahu, of course, is time-wise. Is if I put Pilagash Begiv at the early part of Sefer Shoftim, which would be the 300 or 400 years before Sefer Shmuel, or before the building of the Beit HaMikdash, so Yirmiyahu is about 800 years after our story. So it's a different world. Wow. Right? Yirmiyahu is living through the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. But 100 years before the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, the northern kingdom of Israel was destroyed. The northern kingdom of Israel was always referred to as, by the Nevi'im, was always referred to, we call it Yisrael. Right? We had, when the two kingdoms were split, or when the kingdom was split into two, they essentially referred to the southern kingdom as Yehuda and the northern kingdom as Yisrael. What we refer to typically is the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom. The Nevi'im referred to as Malchut Ephraim. Why was it referred to as Malchut Ephraim?
Wasn't their capital in Ephraim?
Their capital is in Ephraim, in the Shomron, which is in Har Ephraim. It's the capital. Originally, their capital is in Shechem, and then they build the Shomron. Omri builds the city of Shomron, and they move it to the capital, to Shomron. Hence, what we refer to as Yehuda and Shomron was Yehuda and Ephraim in the days of Tanakh. And the other reason it's referred to as Ephraim is because it was founded by a king from Shevet Ephraim, Yerovam ben Nebat. So the references to Ephraim, anytime you see the word Ephraim in the Nevi'im, it's usually a reference to the northern kingdom of Israel. And this parak is no exception. Yirmiyahu is describing expressing a nevuah that is directed at Ephraim. Komar Hashem, Matzachen Bamidbar, Am Sride Charev, Haloch Lahargi O Yisrael. Excuse me?
Number one.
Yep. I'm from the beginning. Thus it says, God, people who survived the sword, referring to the sword of Paro, found grace in the wilderness, meaning they found menucha. They found in the desert, Hashem saved them. And they brought them into peace, sought rest. Merachok Hashem nir'ali, God appeared to me from afar. Ve'avat olam ahavtich, saying, I loved you with an ahavat olam. What's an ahavat olam?
Forever.
Eternal love. Okay. Describing back to the relationship between God and Israel from its very beginning. Al kein misachtich chased. Therefore, I have remained true to you. Od evnech v'nivnet betulat Yisrael. You will once again be built and rebuilt, daughters of Israel. Od ta'adi tupayich. You will once again be adorned with tupim. Tupim are tambourines. V'yatzat bimchol misachakim. And you will once again go out dancing and making merriment and joy. Od titi kramim. You will once again plant vineyards. Bahare Shomron, in the mountains of Shomron. Nat'u not'im v'chilelu. You shall plant, and chalel is to enjoy the fruits of your plantings of your vineyards. Ki yesh yom karu notzlim bahar Ephraim. Shall come a day when the watchman, the notzer, is somebody who watches, who guards, the guardsmen. Notzer chesed la'alafim. Karu notzrim bahar Ephraim, the guards, the watchmen in Har Ephraim shall call out, Kumu v'na'alet Zion el Hashem Elokeinu. Now, if in Har Ephraim they're calling out to go to Zion in Yerushalayim, that means that we have united the two kingdoms. Correct?
Yes.
Because in the days of Amalchut Ephraim, they never went to Zion to Yerushalayim at all. That was part of their issue. So if in this Nevuah Yirmiyahu is describing a time when Har Ephraim, the Shomron, will come back to Zion, then of course we're talking about a time when the reunification of the two kingdoms is at hand. Now you have to understand the context in which, what's going on in Yirmiyahu's time. Yirmiyahu, this is before the exile. Yirmiyahu is about 100 years after the exile of the northern kingdom. So one of the big questions in this discussion in context of Yirmiyahu is, why is Yirmiyahu expressing this to, and who is he speaking to? If the northern kingdom of Har Ephraim has gone into exile 100 years ago, they're gone. Ranuli Yaakov v'simcha. Rejoice for Yaakov, a celebration. V'tzahalu b'rosh ha'goyim, the tops of nations, proclaim upon the tops of heads of nations. Hashmiu, halalu v'imru, hosha Hashem et amcha et she'erit Yisrael. Proclaim, God, save your people, the remnant of Israel. Hineni mevi otam me'eretz tzafon. I will bring them from the land of the north.
Babylonia.
Maybe. It depends. We're pre the Churban. Right? We are pre the exile to Babel.
Okay.
So we'll have to talk about that in a moment. Hineni mevi otam me'eretz tzafon. V'kibatztim mi'arkete aretz. Gather them from the corners of the earth. Bam iver ufiseya charav yoledet yachdav, a great multitude, together with the blind and the lame, and the woman with child, and the one who's laboring. Kahal gadol yashuv lehena, a great company shall return here. Bivchi yavo, they'll come crying. Uvetachanunim ovilem, and I will, with supplications, I will lead them. Olichem el nachalimayim b'derech yashar, I will lead them to the waters, to the rivers. Lo yikashluba, they won't stumble there. Kehiti liYisrael av, I will be a father for them. VeEfrayim bechorihu, and for Ephraim, my firstborn.
That's right.
Now, again, who is he talking to?
Talking to
Ephraim, Right? He's talking to Ephraim. He's talking to the northern kingdom of Israel. So who is the Kahal Gadol Sheyeshuvu Hena?
The 10 tribes.
He's referring to the 10 tribes. He's not referring to the southern kingdom of Judah, which has not yet been destroyed. He's referring to the 10 tribes that went into exile 100 years ago. He's referring to Ephraim. He's referring to the celebration of the redemption, of the restoration of the 10 tribes.
So they're weeping out of joy.
They're weeping out of joy. Shimu dvar Hashem goyim v'agidu ba'iyim imachak. Hear the words, nations declare in the islands far away. V'imru, mizarei Yisrael, he who scattered Israel, yikabtzenu. You shall gather them together. Ushmaro kiro'e edro. And he will guard them like a shepherd guards his flock. The symbolism of ro'e edro is another symbolism that we are familiar with from various nevuot. And of course, becomes central to the theme of Yom Kippur. Ki fada Hashem et Yaakov. God has redeemed Yaakov. U'gi'alo miyad chazak mimenu. And redeemed him from one who was stronger than he. U'vau v'rinenu bimrom tzion. Okay, they came. And they shall come. V'rinenu bimrom tzion, they shall celebrate at the height of tzion, v'naru al tuv Hashem, al dagan, v'al tirosh, v'al yitzar. They will celebrate and flow the goodness of the wheat and the wine and the oil. V'al b'netzon uvakar, v'aitan nafsham, kigan ravev, lo yosifu l'dava od, their soul shall be like a watered garden, they will not know worry anymore. How's a good bet? V'afachti, az tismach betula b'machol. Then the young maiden shall rejoice in
dance.
Ubachurim uzkenim yachdav, young and old together. Vafachti evlam lisason. I will turn their mourning into celebration. Venichamtim. I will have compassion over them, comfort them. Vesimachtim migonam. I will give them. They will celebrate out of their anguish. V'diveti nefesh ha-kohanim deshen v'ami et tuvi yizbaun um Hashem. Why is all of this happening? Pasuk Yud-Dalet. Komar Hashem, kol b'rama nishma. A voice is heard. Now, Rama, the Mefarshim split over how to understand the word Rama. Many, or good number of them translate Rama as on high, meaning a voice calling out. But considering the fact that Rama was a city, and it was a city in the tribal territory of Binyamin. Right. Tribal territory of Binyamin, which would put it in a place where it would make sense for Rachel to be the reference point here. Nechi. Bechi tamurim. There's a voice crying. Tamurim, right, bitterly. Rachel mevaka al baneha, me'ana lehinachem al baneha ki enenu. Rachel crying for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are
not there.
Gone. Ki enenu. To which God's answer response, all of this nevuah up until now, Komar Hashem, mini kolech mibechi ve'enayech midima. Cease your crying, dry your eyes. Yesh sachar lefulatech num Hashem. There is reward for your effort. V'shavu me'eretz oyev. They will return from the land of their enemies. V'yesh tikva lacharitech num Hashem v'shavu banim ligvulam. They shall return to their borders. Then he continues to describe the reference to Ephraim. Pasuk Yitet, I'll skip a little bit. Pasuk Yitzayin, Shamo Shamati Ephraim. I've heard the cries of Ephraim. Mitnoded, traveling, wandering, suffering, crying out, Hashiveni Vashuva, return me and I will return. Ki acharei shuvi nichamti, after I returned, I comforted them. Pasuk yitet, haben yakir li Ephraim, my dear beloved child Ephraim. Mialad shashuim, ki midei dabribo, zocho es kirenu odu, as I speak of him, I remember him more. Hakein amume ailo, my insides are crying out to him. Lachem menachemenu num Hashem, I have compassion over him and shall be merciful. Now, what's not on your sheet, so just follow me for one more moment. Hatzivilach tzionim, set for yourself signposts. Similach tamurim, set up... tamur in modern Hebrew is a traffic light. But signposts, indicators. Shiti libech lemesila derech halacht, pay attention to the road that you took when you went out. Shuvi, Bitulat Yisrael, return, daughter of Israel, Shuvi el Arayech Ele, return to these cities. Ad matay titchamakin habata shoveva, how long are you going to procrastinate? How long are you going to wait, you wayward daughter? Kivara Hashem chadasha ba'aretz, is a new equation in the world that God has created, nekeva tisovev gaver. And in this new equation, it is the woman who has to seek out the man. Which in the context of the metaphor of redemption means that you, Betulat Yisrael, you're waiting for me. It doesn't work that way. I'm waiting for you. The door, the signposts are there. The signs, you have to watch set the breadcrumbs on your journey out so that you will know how to come home. It's time for you to come home. That's the Nevuah, and it goes on from there. And of course, it's a famous Nevuah because we read it as a Haftarah on Rosh Hashanah. It has so many themes that are related to so many different issues. Now, in the context of Yirmiyahu's Nevuah, before we get back to Pilagish Begiva, in the context of Yirmiyahu's Nevuah, this perek, for all kinds of reasons, including a parallel between this perek and a perek in the beginning of the Sefer, was understood by Chazal to be a reference to a mission that Yirmiyahu underwent. Yirmiyahu is the Navi to Shev to Machut Yehuda, he's the Navi who accompanies the Churban. But at one point or another, Yirmiyahu went on a separate mission. What was the separate mission? So the context in which the separate mission appears in the discussion in Chazal is a famous moment in the world of Yoshiyahu HaMelech where he finds a Sefer Torah in the Beit HaMikdash, where the scribes who are fixing up the Beit HaMikdash discover a Sefer Torah. They don't know what to do with this Sefer Torah. They don't know what it means that they discovered this Sefer Torah in the ruins of the Beit HaMikdash, which had been closed for so many years. So they go running to the Navi. Who's the Navi they go running to? You would think. But it turns out in Sefer Malachim that the Navi they go running to is a Navi by the name of Chuldah HaNeviyah. And she interprets this event for them, according to Sefer Malachim. So the Gemara asks a simple question. Why did they go running to Chuldah HaNeviyah, who's never mentioned anywhere else? She has no role, she has no famous significance, other than this particular story. What happened to Yirmiyahu? Yirmiyahu is there. It's the time of Yirmiyahu. It's the world of Yoshiyahu. Yirmiyahu and Yoshiyahu are talking all the time. What happened to Yirmiyahu?
He wasn't available.
So that's what the Gemara says. At that moment in time, Yirmiyahu wasn't available. Where was he? He had gone on his separate mission that God had sent him on a separate mission. In Perek Gimel of Yirmiyahu and Perek Lamed Aleph, which are both connected, he goes on a special mission to the tribes of the northern kingdom of Israel. We'll turn the page over. Says the Gemara, it's a Gemara in Megillah, Mesechet Megillah, Rabbi Yochanan Omer, source number one, Be'otash, Yirmiyahu lo ava hata. Yirmiyahu wasn't there. Where was he? Shehalach lahachzir aseret hashvatim. He had gone on a mission to return the 10 lost tribes.
He must have known where he went.
We know where he went. He went up to where the 10 tribes had gone into exile. The 10 tribes had gone into exile in the region of anywhere between Afghanistan and Iran today. That whole region It's essentially where the 10 tribes were exiled to. Not only did he go on a mission to ask them to come back, but the Gemara asserts that he was successful in his mission. He actually returned the 10 tribes. Because it says, and it goes into a long textual issue to support the suggestion that Yoshiyahu, that in fact Yirmiyahu had returned the representatives of each of the 10 tribes, and that Yoshiyahu had reigned over them, and that there was in fact at that moment a reunification of the tribes of Israel under the leadership of Yoshiyahu. It's this opinion that asserts essentially that when Bnei Yisrael went into exile after the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, all representatives of all 12 tribes were there. Because Yirmiyahu had actually brought them back. And there's a discussion in the Mishnah in Masechet, I think it's actually in Tanit, whether or not we are expecting as part of the Messianic vision a return of the 10 tribes. One opinion says that part of Yemot HaMashiach is the restoration of the 10 tribes. A second opinion says that the 10 tribes are gone and lost forever. And the third opinion is that the 10 tribes returned under the days of Yirmiyahu, so they're there. They were already included. We've lost the tribal division, but they were, in fact, returned into the days of Yoshiyahu, and so that fulfillment of that Nevuah had already taken place. So those are the three options vis-a-vis the 10 tribes. Why is all of this of any relevance to us? Because if we go back to the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu in Lamed Aleph, which Chazal point to as the focal point of Yirmiyahu's message to the tribes, to the 10 tribes, to the restoration of the 10 tribes of Israel. What we see in that Nevuah are hints to a story or a message that is actually less relevant to the tribes of Ephraim and more relevant to the tribe of Binyamin. So, for example, the reference to Kol B'Ramah. Why is Rachel crying in Ramah? Ramah is in Shevet Binyamin. Binyamin is part of Shev Malchut Yehuda. Binyamin had not yet gone into exile. So where's the reference to Kol B'Ramah? Why is she in Ramah? There were all of the descriptions in this Nevuah of, and on the bottom I gave you a sort of a parallel picture of the two stories, right? Our perek next to this perek that we just read in Yirmiyahu, all of these references to the machol, to the dancing, to the celebration, to the vineyards, to the kremim, to Har Shomron, to Har Ephraim, to the remnants of Israel, Sherit Yisrael, to Az Tismach Betula B'machol, to the virgin, to the young maidens, the daughters. Which is a reference to the daughters of Shiloh. To the transformation of the Evel to Sason, the destruction to celebration. And of course, Kol B'Ramah Nishma, Rachel Mevakal Baneah. All of these references sound like they are appropriate for a story that talked about the vineyards and dancing. And Binyamin, which is Ramah Shevet Binyamin. But none of this is Har Ephraim. This is all Pelagish Begivah. This is all the story of Tubav. So the theory is that it's not uncommon for Nevi'im to take old Nevu'ot and rework them. Much as you would take old classic pieces of speeches and phrases and rework them into a modern context. Familiar phrases, familiar paradigms that the people understood because they referenced events that they could get their heads around, that they saw as symbolic of the message that the Navi is trying to convey, both positively and negatively. And you want to threaten Bnei Yisrael with the Churban, so you remind them of what happened when Shiloh was destroyed. Yirmiyahu does that too. When he says to them, "Kishiloh yah habayit hazeh," this house will be like Shiloh. That was not an uncommon thing for Yirmiyahu to do. Take old nivuot, old messages, and rework them into a modern application. So if he's talking to Har Ephraim, if he's talking to the remnant, the survivors of the destruction of Ephraim, he wants to rebuild from a paradigm of a near destruction, destroying, nearly destroyed Shevet that was rebuilt, rehabilitated, and reconstituted. Right? What better image than
Benjamin?
One of the most interesting phrases he uses is Kol Berama Nishma Nehi Bechi Tamurim Rachel Mavakal Baneh Me'ana Lehinachem Al Baneh Ki Enenu. And she refuses to be comforted for her children. She's sitting. She's crying in Ramah, refusing to be comforted for her children because they are
gone.
Now, the phrase Ki Enenu. I didn't put my board over. But spell it out. I just didn't prepare it. Right? Ki enenu. They are gone. Aleph, Yud, Nun, Nun, Vav. What is the name that Rachel gives to Binyamin? Remember the issue of the naming of Binyamin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? What is the name that Rachel gives to Binyamin? Ben Oni, Aleph Vav Nun Yud. Rachel refers to Binyamin as Ben Oni. It's only Yaakov who renames him as Ben Yamin. So when Rachel is crying for her child, Ki Enenu, are we talking about Binyamin or Ben Oni or are we talking about Ephraim? That's dancing in the Kremim.
Wow.
Right? So all of these allusions go back to the story of Rachel, and it goes back to the story of Binyamin. Now, if I go back to the story where Binyamin's born, it's a very important moment. Why does, in the Navi's context, why does God say, or through the Navi, say to Rachel, right, don't cry, there's reward for your effort. To what effort are we referring? What effort are we referring to which God says, don't cry, there will be reward for your effort, your children will come home?
There's so many things.
Right. For continuity.
So in the Medrash, there's a very famous depiction of the conversation that Rachel has with God about this, the after the Churban. Right? Anachronistically, the Medrash took all this whole Nevuah and applied it to the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. So in the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, we have an entire parak of keynote about it, where the avot come before God to pray for on behalf of the Bnei Israel, and God refuses to heed the cries of the avot until Rachel comes. And what does Rachel say? Rachel says, why are you jealous for Israel for their worshipping of other gods and other idols? Right? I was never jealous for my competition. Why should you be jealous for your competition? And the famous story about how she says to God, I gave over the simanim, as Rashi puts it, right? The Sirata simanim, that I gave Yaakov the simanim to recognize that it was me. So when Lavan tried to pull the switch on us, and all of that says the Medrash, and you have the text, I'm not going to go through it now, but you have the text on the back in source 2, in Echa Rabbah. All of that is a description of Rachel's effort or of self-sacrifice. She was willing to allow Leah into her home, so God, you should not be so zealous and jealous for these other gods that Israel lets into your home. I was willing to sacrifice on your behalf, so you can as well. That's in the Midrashic context, that's the story of Rachel's effort that God rewards. Leaving the Midrashic piece aside for a second, let's go back to the story in Bereshit. What effort does Rachel demonstrate for which God promises her a reward?
Laban's idols?
I'm not sure that is a worthy of a reward type of issue. Yaakov sees, according to Rashi, there's a subtext that's part of the why she dies, right? Because she of that oath that Yaakov had taken.
Right.
But I think that there's a bigger issue. When she names her child Ben Oni, Me'anali nachem abanea ki enenu. She names the child Ben Oni. Why? So one of the big debates in the Mefarshim is to what happened when Binyamin was named. Why does Rachel call him Ben Oni, and Yaakov renames him to Ben Yamin? What's the dispute going on there between Rachel and Leah? Between Yaakov and Rachel. Why are they arguing about how to name this child? So I want to share this with you once. Why Rachel calls him Ben Oni and Yaakov Ben Benjamin?
Maybe.
We don't remember.
What does the word Oni mean?
Affliction.
No, that would be with an ayin.
Oh.
Is a poor person.
An Oni with an ayin is a poor person.
Oh.
An Oni with an aleph is a different word altogether. Is suffering.
Suffering.
Or more importantly, or more specifically, mourning. What do we refer to? What's a person called between death and burial? An Oni. Lo achalti be'oni mimenu. By vidui maaser. Didn't eat it when I was an onen. Right? An onen is a special status in halacha of a mourner. It's an intense type of mourning. Right? When she refers to this child as ben oni, what is she saying?
She knows she's dying.
She was struggling through the childbirth. The child is born and she names him ben oni, essentially calling him the son of
my
death.
Because he's going to be an onen.
This child is born in her death. In other words, this child, essentially, is being born into a world in which he is going to be an orphan. And she knows it. Now, why is he an orphan? Why is she dying?
Why is he being an orphan, though? It's not really.
An orphan from what? Halachically, an orphan from
mother.
Either. Halachically, an orphan is from both. Is either one is called an orphan. But Yatomus is either parent. In modern English, an orphan is somebody that doesn't have parents. But in halacha, if you lose a parent, it's called an onen. It's called a yatom. But that's not the issue. The issue is conceptually. Why is she dying? Let's ask the question differently. Why is she dying? So there's this midrashic issue about the oath that Yaakov had taken, etc. But in the pshat of the story in Sefer Bereishit, why of all the children born, why is she the only one who dies in childbirth? In a certain sense, Chazal, the connection to that oath saw it as a slip of the tongue in Yaakov. But forgetting that oath for a moment of Yaakov saying about the Trefim, in the pshat of Sefer Bereishit, why is she dying?
I know she's traveling.
Right. Because she's traveling while pregnant. She has Binyamin just as they come into the land of Israel, which means that their whole journey back from Bavel, back from Lavan's house, from Haran, she's pregnant. They come into the land of Israel and she gives birth and she can't. Traveling in that world was a very dangerous and a very difficult process. Even in 70 years ago, if you embarked on a long and hard and arduous journey while you were pregnant, you ran a serious risk of losing either the mother or the child. And she desperately needs to have this child. She desperately needs to give birth to this child. So she does everything in her power. When Yaakov came to them and said, it's time for us to leave, and the Rachel and Leah said, okay, we'll go with you, understand what it meant. Rachel, for Leah, it meant, okay, I'll pack up my kids and we'll go. For Rachel, it meant, right? I'm pregnant
dangerous.
And we're going to go.
It's dangerous.
She gave her life for Binyamin. She gave her life for Binyamin, and she knew it.
Because she called him that. She had enough.
And that's why she names him Ben Oni. The son born of my sacrifice. I gave my life for this child. Wow. Now that means that from her perspective, when she names that child Ben Oni, if she gave her life for that child, then what essentially is she holding? Is she saying when she names him Ben Oni? She's turning to the world. She's turning to the Ribono Shel Olam and saying, "Look what I gave for this child. Look what I gave to bring Binyamin into the world." Now Yaakov renames him. and refers to him as Ben Yamin. So there's a whole discussion what Ben Yamin means. Yamin meaning right or right hand. So Rashi says it means south, because in those days maps were sideways, so south meant the land of Israel, and he was referring to the child of Ben Zion, born in the land of Israel. Other mafreshim, other interpretations. Some suggest it means son of my right hand, meaning strength. Another they translate Oni not as affliction and mourning, but as Rishit Oni, the first of my strength. And therefore, Benjamin is another way of saying first of my strength, but over it doesn't explain why there's a change in names. Whole debate as to what the change of name is about. But if I follow this line of reasoning, where she names this child Ben-Oni because of her sacrifice, Yaakov renames him Ben-Yamin, referring to the right hand. What does the right hand symbolize?
Strength.
Can symbolize strength, but it has another significance also. Almost. Almost.
Integrity.
What does the right hand symbolize? When do you use your right hand?
You take an oath.
Correct. Oh. When you take
that's
an oath.
That's what I said, integrity.
Right. And justice. It's all connected. You take a right hand. You take an oath with your right hand. And there are psukim in Tanakh that refer to the notion of the right hand as a form of oath. Nishba Hashem bimino ubizo uzo. God took an oath with his right hand, so to speak. Imeshkechech Yerushalayim tishkach yimini. Why am I tishkach yimini? If I forget the oath that I took for Yerushalayim, what should be punished? My right hand, which took the oath, and Lishoni, which spoke the oath. It's connected. So when she names this child the son of my sacrifice, Yaakov renames him as the son of the oath. Now we can have a wonderful debate about which oath. So is it Yaakov's oath that he said to Lavan, the first, if anybody took the Trophim, they should die, right? Or is it the oath that Yaakov and Rachel together understood was the commitment that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave to watch over this child who was born out of the sacrifice of Rachel? Mini kolech mi bechi, says God to Rachel. Yesh sachar lefulatech. I promise I will protect this child. You sacrificed your life to bring Binyamin into this world. I will protect this child. Binyamin in Moshe's Nevuah at the end of Sefer Bereishit, it's the end of Sefer Dvarim, is called Yedid Hashem, the beloved of God. The place of the Shechina, the place of the Beit HaMikdash will be set.
But there were some troubles.
So what's the oath? The oath is, like all oaths of protection, they don't promise that nothing will ever happen. They promise that they won't be extinct. And that's what Rachel said. When Rachel comes to God and says, you promised. And God says, I will fulfill my promise. Rachel mevakal b'naki enenu. Enenu is not just Ephraim, and then it was an old reference to Ben-Oni. And God's answer, Yesh Sechal Lefulatech. So the message of this whole story of Pilagash Begiva is that it became the paradigm for a symbol, as you can imagine in the aftermath of Pilagash Begiva, as they're sitting in the Beit HaMikdash, when there's Mishkan and Shiloh in this case, and crying over Binyamin, Kin Nicham, what's the phrase that's used? Ve'am nicham leBinyamin, ki yasa Hashem peretz b'shiftei Yisrael. Can you imagine what they're saying? Where is your promise to Rachel? Where is your promise to Ben Oni? What happened to that commitment that Binyamin would be protected? Yadid Hashem, alav shechen kol hayom, that God would protect Binyamin, that God would place his Shechina on Binyamin. What happened to your promise to Binyamin? What happened to
almost wiped him out.
That's right. You can imagine at that moment, Kol Baramanishma in Binyamin, Ramah is the capital city of Binyamin, Rachel crying over her child, Ki Enenu. This Nevuah isn't about Ephraim. It's about Binyamin. It's about Pilagish Begiva, borrowed by Yirmiyahu to apply to Ephraim in a much broader context, but I go back to its original context. And the answer? The that God expresses through this story to Rachel is Shavu Vanim Lugvulam. They'll go back to their borders. They'll go back to their cities. V'yashuvu al nachalatam, v'yivnu at ha'arim, v'yashvu behem. They go back to their cities. They go back to their boundaries. V'shavu banim l'gvulam.
How can Hashem wipe out Binyamin, who was the only Ben Yisrael, was actually born in Israel?
There's no place where God says if you're born in Israel, you won't be destroyed.
But to
Rachel's sacrifice, there is an oath. Yaakov refers to it, Ben Yamin. And if that's the oath to Rachel, that this child will always be protected, will always, then we understand why Yaakov refuses to let Binyamin out of his sight, mm-hmm. in the story of Yosef. Mm-hmm. Binyamin takes on a whole different context. It's not just the last child of Rachel who represents Rachel. He's the child who represents Rachel's sacrifice. She gave her life to bring this child into the world. That kind of sacrifice, says Yaakov, demands a moral responsibility on everybody else's account. My account as a father and husband, and the Rebbeinu Shlomo's account as an oath that he will forever guard and protect Binyamin. And in that context, the story of Pelegesh Begiva becomes really the paradigm, the whole gamut of Churban v'Geula, the ability to rehabilitate out of the ashes or out of the Sherita Plita, that we will never completely be destroyed. That's the promise that God gave to Israel, built on the promise that he gave to Rachel over Binyamin. And
that's quite powerful.
It is.
All right.